Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Don't become obsolete. Hi, friends. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Rebecca, and today is day two of our business article, The Path of Innovation. So we'll talk about products that were very useful for a season, but later they became obsolete. But first, I'd like to welcome my friend Campbell on the program.
Hello, everybody. It's great to be here.
Campbell, it's great to have you. And while we're talking about this article, I keep thinking, how do we keep reinventing ourselves so that we don't become obsolete?
That's a great question. Because I think, you know, not everybody's in business. Not everybody is necessarily an entrepreneur or producing products. So maybe sometimes this isn't as applicable to them in that case. Yes. But as people and human beings, we are the products, and we also need to continue to reinvent ourselves.
Yes, reinventing ourselves. And I was just thinking, what is one skill that you learned in school or early in your career that right now AI can kind of do that skill and do it pretty well?
Like, there's so many. I mean, the one example that I can think of is, you know, I read the articles sometimes for Advanced, right?
Yes.
Now, in the past, if I made a mistake and it wasn't caught during recording, I would have to come back in and the sound engineer would have to find that spot and then I'd have to re-record it. But now with AI and our amazing sound engineer, Ginger, she's able to just use AI and fix what I read incorrectly and I don't have to show up at all.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
It saves a lot of time.
Yeah, and I don't think anybody can really tell that it's AI that, you know, because it's usually like one or two words, but
right.
It's amazing.
It's not a whole article or a whole section.
No.
Right. Well, AI is getting really good. One other thing I was thinking of is writing.
Yeah.
Because writing is a big part of our job here at Studio Classroom.
Right.
We write magazine articles.
Yeah.
And lately, we've been working on using AI to write and help
sure.
us brainstorm and help us craft articles. So AI is becoming AI. I keep thinking for decades, we've honed our skill as writers.
Right.
I mean, part of the reason they hired us is because we don't only host programs,
we
can write very well.
Exactly.
And nowadays, I find AI writes really well.
It does.
The thing of AI is sometimes it lacks heart.
Right.
It lacks a soul.
Yeah.
So when you read AI writing, you can still tell it's AI writing.
Right. So I think that's where the reinvention comes along, right? I think, you know, we need to up our game and we need to improve ourselves so that it's no longer solely just writing, but we're able to discern what is good and what is not, and we're able to adjust, right? And I think that's where the human element, and that's where I feel like AI can't replace humans, is that, yes, it can write an article, but our ability to read it and decipher whether this is good, whether this is natural or not, you know? Like, for example, you can easily feed an article through AI and ask it to translate it for you, but as you're reading the translation, if you know the language well enough, you're able to decipher, oh, well, that's not quite how a native speaker would speak.
Right. So you can improve on. You become kind of like the curator or maybe the editor of the writing that AI does.
Yes,
but it really is advancing very fast, like with the newer models coming out.
Yeah.
Like, it's really improving.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you know, the videos that the AI is producing now, a lot of times you can barely tell that it's AI.
Yeah, it's not like in the old days is like when you alter a photo of AI, like it will come up with like two more arms or, you know,
seven fingers.
Like, that was like earlier models, right?
But
now it's got really, really good. Well, let's get into our first reading for today, and let's continue on our topic of gateway products.
Gateway products often develop loyal followings among people who've invested time in learning them. BlackBerry devotees became virtuosos of the physical keyboard. Customers have sunk costs, and they're reluctant to switch But mastery-based loyalty evaporates the moment a competitor makes it unnecessary. Smartphones didn't require users to learn a new input language. They just worked. If your customer retention depends on what people have learned rather than what they love, you're more vulnerable than your churn numbers suggest.
So sometimes gateway products can have very devoted fans.
Yeah.
Right? Like even though it's a gateway product, there are people who really love it.
Yeah. I think, you know, and we end the end of yesterday's article talked about the fact that dedicated devices don't always lose, right? Mm. There are people who still love the physical cameras. And I think there are still artists who insist on using film cameras in certain ways. So there are people who still are very loyal to these gateway products, especially for those that have invested time in learning them.
Yes, it's true. And here it gives one example. Here it has the BlackBerry, right?
Mm-hmm.
The BlackBerry is kind of like it's not a smartphone, but it's kind of like a smartphone. It's a pre-smartphone.
Yeah.
So it's a phone with a screen and a keyboard. And the BlackBerry devotees, they became virtuosos of the physical keyboard.
Right.
Now, that's really interesting because like virtuoso is not a word we usually use when we talk about typing.
No,
right?
We usually use it in terms of a musician,
yes.
Right? As someone who is very skilled, very good at doing something, especially performing music. But in this case, they were virtuosos. They were very, very good at typing on this physical keyboard because from what I remember, the BlackBerry, it wasn't as straightforward as the keyboard that's on the computer. It required certain shortcuts and things that, you know, you needed to know in order to use it well.
And what I was always amazed is when I would see these, you know, these big strong men typing on their tiny little keyboard. It's like your fingers have to be very agile,
right,
to be able to type.
Yes.
On that tiny, tiny keyboard.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
And as we were saying yesterday, BlackBerries were quite the investment. And so
Yes. This
is why this next sentence says, customers have sunk costs and they're reluctant to switch. So they already put the time and the money into this BlackBerry. So they're reluctant to, you know, transfer to another model.
Yes. So sunk cost is basically any time you put a lot of time or money or resources into something and you can't get it back.
Yes.
Like you might have spent 1,000 hours learning this skill. So it's time that you can never buy back.
Right.
Because like with time, like once you spend it, you'll never be able to buy back. And sometimes it's a sunk cost that really prevent us from moving forward.
Yes.
Because we think we've invested so much time or invested so much money. Like maybe you buy a poor stock.
Yeah.
But you're like, I have already paid so much money for this.
Right.
I don't want to lose.
Yes.
So sometimes it's really hard to walk away.
It is.
When you have a big sunk cost.
Yes.
But at the same time, whether it's stock or in life, sometimes the best thing is to walk away.
Right. Yeah. And I think the advice here for entrepreneurs is that if you are just solely depending on people to not switch because they're afraid of sunk costs, that is not a stable foundation to build a business on.
Yes. It's very not stable because here it says mastery-based loyalty evaporates the moment a competitor makes it unnecessary.
Mm-hmm.
Let's break that down. So mastery-based loyalty, that just means that someone has spent a lot of time on your product, so they've mastered it.
Yeah.
They've got really, really good at it. Like the example we had here of the BlackBerry people, people using BlackBerries become so good at typing that tiny little keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
But this loyalty evaporates, and we think about evaporate. We usually think of like water, right? Water
right.
Becoming a gas.
Yeah.
Like you boil water at such a high temperature, it becomes a gas.
Yeah.
So this loyalty completely is
disappears.
Gone. Disappears once a competitor makes a better product that's easy to use.
Yeah, and you don't need that skill, right? I think of also, you know, the cameras, the SLR cameras that we were talking about. You know, it used to be, you know, you'd have to spend time studying how to focus the camera, how to hit the shutter, how to get the right lighting. And now the iPhone does it all for you and it makes it easier, right? So in a way, that skill that people invested time and money into learning is not necessary anymore.
Yes, it doesn't feel necessary. I just think of my photography class because some years ago, like I think maybe 7 or 8 years ago, I actually took photography class for a year,
right,
trying to learn how to focus, trying to learn how to do the exposure,
right,
the flash, yeah, and all that. I was not a very good student. But then I don't have to be a good student because with the rise of the smartphone,
mm-hmm,
like anyone can take a good photo.
Yeah.
You just need a good enough phone.
Yeah, and you have to have the right settings on the phone, just put, you know, and just take the photo.
That's right. So, you know, sometimes we just can't rely on people continue to use your product because they put so much time and effort into it.
Right.
And then the next part, it goes, if your customer retention, so retention just means keeping your customer, depends on what people have learned rather than what they love, you're more vulnerable than your churn numbers suggest.
Mm-hmm.
What is churn? This is the first time I've seen this word, actually.
Yeah, me too, actually. So basically, the churn number or churn is basically the number of people who stop buying or using a company's products or services during a particular period. So, you know, businesses are often tracking this number just to see how well they're doing in the marketplace.
Yes. So you're vulnerable to high churn numbers. It's not really the features that you have that they have to have, but you think it's because my customers have spent so much time mastering, mm-hmm, my product. Well, friends, let's get into our next reading. And here we'll talk about if you made a new product, what are some questions you need to ask yourself so that you future-proof yourself, you prepare yourself for the future. Let's get into our next reading.
New product? Questions to ask. 1. What complexities does our product require that customers would prefer to eliminate entirely? Every negative is an opening for a competitor who does away with it. 2. If someone started fresh today with current technology, would they build this the same way? If the answer is no, if they'd build something that makes your product unnecessary, you have a gateway. 3. What temporary technological gap are we exploiting? Flip cameras existed because smartphone cameras weren't good enough yet. GPS units existed because phones lack sensors and software. Identify your gap and monitor it relentlessly. 4. What's our plan for when the gap closes? This is the question most leaders avoid. Acknowledging that your hit product has an expiration date feels like disloyalty, but the alternative is being caught flat-footed.
When you come up with a new product, you have to ask yourself 4 questions. Campbell, let's start from the first one.
All right. So 1, what complexities does our product require that customers would prefer to eliminate entirely? So again, back to the idea of the BlackBerry, right? It required, mm-hmm, people to learn how to type on this little keyboard and not the usual way of typing, a specific way of typing. So this was something that was a little bit more complex than usual. So this is probably something that people would prefer not to do. And so it was a negative. And when the smartphone came and took care of this negative, then the BlackBerry became obsolete.
Yes. And then we get to 2. And this one is really true. If someone started fresh with current technology, would they build this product the same way?
Hmm.
Because the truth is, a lot of times, we usually to save costs, we will build on old technology,
yeah,
because we don't have the money to build it on the new technology.
Right.
But if we're really honest with ourselves, the old technology, it's not that easy to use.
Mm-hmm.
Like one example is we had one product that we use a lot, for schools, and it's really built on an older technology that nowadays only works with young children.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work for older students because,
right,
this technology now with the, you know, with touchpads and with iPads, like people want to just, they want to be able to touch everything.
Right.
They don't want to have to use another device.
Yeah.
you know, in order to play this device. Like, for example, with your TV, if I can use touchscreen TV, perhaps your kids just go to the TV and they just touch what they want.
Right.
They're not like us.
Yeah.
Where we have to use a remote control
yeah.
to turn on the TV
yeah.
and change channels.
Right.
Like, I think with young kids today, they just assume that every single screen should be touchscreen.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's one huge difference of where using today's current technology, everything would be touch.
Right.
You wouldn't need all these secondary accessories like a remote control or
yeah.
a separate device to open a screen.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. All right. And number three, what temporary technological gap are we exploiting? So obviously, again, all these products are solving an issue, but these issues might be temporary. Okay. Flip cameras existed because smartphone cameras weren't good enough yet. So this was a temporary problem. Once the smartphone cameras came out and they became pretty good, then the flip cameras became obsolete. GPS units existed because phones lacked sensors and software, but now our phones can act as GPS and the GPS units are no longer necessary. So the advice here is figure out what is the problem that you are solving it. What is the problem that you're solving and monitor it. Like, make sure that you are continuously solving it in the best and most efficient way.
Yes. And then you have to monitor that gap, that basically the technological gap that nobody has solved yet. You have to monitor the gap relentlessly.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're relentless in something, it just means that you're very determined. You keep looking at it. You keep checking at it. You never give up on it. So you have to monitor it relentlessly. You have to make sure that you know exactly where the market is going.
Right.
So that when a new technology comes out, you're not behind.
Yes.
Yeah, and that leads us to our fourth point. What is our fourth point when that gap becomes smaller or even closes?
Well, this is the question that most leaders kind of avoid, right? Because it kind of is saying that while, yeah, this is an amazing product, but maybe it's not the best. It's almost kind of acknowledging a little bit of defeat in a way, which can be a little bit counterintuitive because it's like, I have this product. I spend so much time developing this product. Obviously, I want to push this product out, but it can be hard to admit that maybe something better can come along.
Hmm.
So it is important for you to acknowledge and to have a plan for when something inevitably better comes along. Otherwise, you're going to be caught flat-footed.
What is flat-footed?
Right. Well, this is an interesting phrase. It means that you're going to surprise someone so that they cannot do something in the way they ought to, right? So I think the idea here is like if you're in a race, right? You're getting ready to go on a race, or if you're in maybe a boxing competition, you're kind of light on your feet. You're never planted fully, right? When you're flat-footed, it means your feet are firmly planted on the ground. It's not easy for you to be very nimble, right? So if you're not aware of what if you have a plan for what happens when the gap closes, then you're going to be planted and you're not going to be able to move or shift as quickly or as nimbly as possible.
So you definitely need to have a plan. So basically, anytime you roll out a product, you have to be aware that every product has a life cycle,
mm-hmm.
just like humans, right? We
yeah.
all have a life cycle. So there's the introduction or the birth of the product, and then there's the growth phase. And then after the growth phase is the mature phase, and this is when your product sells really, really well.
Right.
But then the sad thing is after the mature phase, usually there is a decline.
Right.
And eventually that product has to be phased out.
Right.
So hopefully, even when you're making the product, you have to understand that there is a product life cycle, and your product will eventually be phased out or decline.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that this is important to note.
Yeah.
Well, friends, we get into our last reading for today, and then let's talk about, let's conclude about Gateway products.
Is a Gateway valuable? None of this means Gateway products are bad businesses. The strategic error is being lured into believing that it will be a permanent franchise. That can lead, in turn, to overinvesting in extending the product's life. building organizations for a form factor that's becoming obsolete, and missing the chance to be the company that makes its own product unnecessary. Apple famously undermined its own hugely profitable iPod to launch the modern smartphone revolution, leading to enormous value creation. Gateway products can be supremely valuable. They're like paying tuition to learn about the future.
Well, Campbell, we've been warning business leaders and entrepreneurs that they have to make sure that they understand their product lifecycle, and they need to know that every product has a lifespan. Mm-hmm. But here it says that doesn't mean gateway products are bad businesses.
Right.
Right? Because like, you can still make a lot of money from a gateway product.
I would even challenge that gateway products are necessities, right? That you almost have to go through the gateway product to get to the other products. And eventually those other products are probably going to become gateways as well if you don't innovate and you don't change.
That's true. We can almost say that almost most products are gateway products.
Yeah.
They're a gateway to something even better.
Right. You know, I can even think of like ChatGPT, right? Mm. I mean, that just came out a couple years ago. But I feel like even now, ChatGPT, unless it starts to reinvent itself, because now there's all these different AIs and Gemini and Claude and Grok and all these different AI things that are coming out. And people are starting to say, oh, well, ChatGPT is almost obsolete. Right. So it just, things move really fast nowadays. And the thing is that it's not to say that the gateway products are bad, but the problem is that when we're lured into believing, lured just means that we're persuaded or we're kind of enticed to believe that this is a permanent franchise, that this is the best product and nothing else is going to ever replace it.
And when you think something is permanent, you invest a lot of, we talked about infrastructure yesterday, right? We talked about infrastructure for the fax machine. Like with a fax machine, you don't just have a fax machine. You need the paper, you need a phone line, and you need somebody else to also have a fax machine, right?
Right.
So we talked about all the infrastructure that is needed. So here it talks about when you think something is permanent, that can lead to over-investing or spending too much time and money in extending the product's life.
Right.
So you might just like, you know, maybe you put too many people on your staff working on something that's becoming obsolete, or you spend too much money in marketing the product. There's just so many ways you can over-invest. And then here it goes on to say, building organizations for a form factor that's becoming obsolete. And a form factor, again, is kind of design, the look, the feel of that device, the hardware specs of that device. And missing the chance to be the company that makes its own product unnecessary.
Right.
And then here we have the example of Apple.
Yeah.
And Apple is an example of a success case. Because, I mean, it continues to roll out iPhones and many other products quite well.
Right. Yeah. And I remember actually buying an iPod and investing money and thinking, wow, I have the coolest, newest technology. Because before that, I had a Discman. I don't know if anybody knows what that is, where it's like a portable CD player. You know, I had a Discman and then I transferred to the iPod and I was like, so cool. But then within years, months even, like the iPod became obsolete and then the iPhone came out, you know? And basically, what we're saying here is Apple replaced its own product.
Yes.
Apple made its own product obsolete.
That's amazing. It's so hard. Because here it says, Apple famously undermined. What is undermined?
Just basically kind of went in and it took away from the profits of the iPod, right?
And it was willing to do that because Steve Jobs so believed in the smartphone he was rolling out.
Mm-hmm.
So he wanted to give that smartphone a chance. In business, we even have the term, this product actually cannibalizes on another product.
Right.
So what's a cannibal?
A cannibal
and what does cannibalize mean?
Well, a cannibal is basically, if we're talking about a human, it's a person that eats another human, right? It's a cannibal. So when we're talking about something cannibalizing itself, it just basically eats itself. Right.
So the iPhone was the cannibal that ate the iPod.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. And so going back to the example of the Kodak that you mentioned earlier, that was a negative example where it had the chance to reinvent and kind of make its own product obsolete, but it chose not to.
Yes.
And then eventually went away. the whole company.
Because the competitors had the boldness to roll it out.
Yeah.
Because for competitors, they have nothing to lose. And I think that makes it hard for the successful companies, because for every successful companies, there are 100 companies wanting to be you.
Mm-hmm.
And they will do anything to get your position.
Yeah.
They're fresh, they're hungry.
Yeah.
And they're after the kill.
Yeah, and I mean, there's that phrase, right? There's nothing new under the sun.
Yes.
Right? It's just, it's all the same, but it's just reinvented, kind of shifting. And just one slight tweak can make that product a little bit better or more useful or more convenient, and then your product becomes old.
That's right. So you have to keep treating each day as, you have to relentlessly look at your product, and then you also have to not be so tied to that product that you're not willing to let it go when the time comes.
Right.
So here it goes on to say, gateway products can be supremely valuable. Supremely valuable means just means very valuable. They are like paying tuition to learn about the future.
Yeah.
Paying tuition. So you're paying tuition to learn about the future by making that product for today.
Yeah, because basically it's exposing a genuine need, right? It's almost like testing, like, do people need this? Do people want this? Is this something that is profitable? And once they test it out, they're like, yeah, it is. So it is something that, you know, it's impossible for you to make that perfect product, right? So maybe you can come up with something that is good enough. And that is the test. That is like, okay, well, is this something people want? Is this something people need? And then we can invent on it and improve on it and work on it and make it better.
Yeah, so we just keep improving on things, right? Mm-hmm. Keep pivoting. Another good word that we learned earlier this month on Advanced, to keep pivoting, and also to iterate, to make small changes to make things better. Well, friends, that brings us to the end of today's article, but definitely come back tomorrow and we'll talk about a very, very cool product tomorrow, which may be a gateway product. I think it might not. It might be a permanent product. So come back tomorrow for more on Advanced. I'm Rebecca.
I'm Campbell.
Saying goodbye.
Bye.